You're with Cape Talk.
Welcome back, my dear. How are you, Tungai?
Good morning! How are you?
I'm so good. You must be in the money. You're in the money.
Oh, yes. Always winning and always in the money.
The sister with the face beat and the spreadsheet. Let us know about the fees that are expected on unit trust versus endowments. Well, first, let's start off with the what are they?
Definitely, we always need to go back to basics. What is an endowment? What is a unit trust?
Yes, ma'am. So
I love to actually explain a unit trust as a very sophisticated stock style where people come together, pool their resources, and allow an expert in the form of an investment manager or fund manager to actually make decisions about which things to actually invest. So you would find that someone will come with 500, another person 1,000, another 1,000,000, but it doesn't really matter as long as you qualify from a minimum investment criterion. And then that entire pool is then used by the fund manager to then buy or sell appropriate stocks, appropriate bonds, appropriate money market instruments, just so that the investor can then get a decent return over time.
Got you. And I suppose then you'd select your unit trust on the basis of those two things, the time that you have for investment as well as the return that you seek.
You are in the money, girl. You are a guru. I could actually hire you and make you my own staff.
Fabulous. I love it. Okay, so how does that differ from an endowment?
So an endowment is a contractual agreement that you actually have with a life insurance company where you are obligated to make regular payments over a specified period of time in exchange for a lump sum payout at a predetermined time. So I'll give an example. If you buy an endowment worth, say, 1,000 rand a month, you're expected to then continuously contribute that 1,000 rand a month for a period of either 5 years, 10 years, 15 or 20, depending on what your investment goal is, your investment horizon is. And basically the idea is that after your investment term, your lock-in period, which could be 5, 10, 15 or 20 years, you then get a lump sum paid out to you.
Is this a guaranteed, it's a guaranteed amount? No.
So you can opt to have a guarantee in it. And that's actually one of the differences between your unit trust and your endowment. Whereas your unit trust is completely open-ended. You're the boss of it. You're the master of it. Whatever the market does, you do with it. On the other hand, you actually have the opportunity to mitigate some of the risk by actually taking a guarantee on your endowment, which is not available for a unit trust.
Now, from a fee perspective, which of these is cheaper?
Definitely the unit trust.
And why is that?
And I love the way you think, because costs are so important in
Absolutely.
This kind of environment where they've been predominantly very low returns. So you'll find that with a unit trust, generally, you have what we call an advisory fee, which can be anything between 0 to 3%, excluding that. Then you also have the management fee. So remember that fund manager who goes around looking for the best opportunities for you. They will then also charge for their skill, their expertise and knowledge. And they can charge anything between 1% up to about maybe 2-2.5%. And then normally, if you are part of a list platform, there's also what we call a list platform fee, which can be anything between 0 and 0.5%, excluding that. So overall, the costs involved for a unit trust tend to be lower than those for an endowment. Your endowment can be anything between about 4% to about 6%, because it's an all-inclusive rate. So they don't break it down to say, okay, the advisor fee is this, the management fee is this, the platform fee is this. It's normally an all-inclusive fee, but the idea is whatever fee you get charged, make sure that the returns allow you to justify the fees that
Correct.
You're being charged.
So you can't be hoping for something that'll give you a 7% return if you're giving away half 4 to 6% of it in endowment or 3.5% of it in LISP and fund management fee.
Absolutely. You're my star student today.
Oh, yay. Naughty bunch. Okay. So just help me understand, you know, when would you use each? They obviously each have a place within the financial, the litany of financial products. When are the pros and cons highlighted for each of these?
Definitely. So I would say, if you're a high net worth client, so high net worth client being an individual who earns large amounts of money, and you also find yourself in a tax bracket that is above 30%. So every single month you guys pay tax towards the tax man or SARS. If your income tax bracket is not more than 30%, then I generally would not recommend an endowment, because within the framework of the endowment, the tax is actually at 30% within the product. Whereas if your unit trust, whatever interest income or dividends you earn are normally taxed at your marginal tax rate. So right. If you're in an 18% tax bracket, then your unit trust makes more sense for you.
Gotcha.
If you are in a 45% tax bracket, however, then definitely endowments are your best friends, because you're now saving from a tax perspective. So you'll find that it will be different things for different folks. And then you also find that the fee structure for the endowment tends to become better over time.
How
so if
that?
You've got a very long investment horizon,
yes,
such as 15 years, 20 years, then the fee structure actually becomes as competitive as your unit trust. So over long periods of time, you want your endowment, whereas for your unit trust, you want that if you know that you need to access it periodically. Now, remember, unit trusts are quite flexible in their structure. You can take money as and when you want. You can put money as and when you want. There are no limitations to the amount. So if you're looking for that flexibility, so you're the type of person who wants to save throughout the whole year, so that at the end of the year, you prepay your child's fee. So a five-year contractual investment is not going to be the right vehicle for you,
right,
because that would limit you in terms of then your effective financial planning and liquidity, correct?
Got you. Nikki has sent us a WhatsApp asking, she has three children, aged 16, 14, and 12, and has unit trust accounts for each of them, accumulates money over a few months, and then buys more as she can for each. Are unit trusts the best for young people, do you think?
So I think it comes back to what I just addressed. And I'm so proud of you, Nikki, because you're doing the right thing, saving for your children. Thumbs up for you. But you want to ask yourself again, for what purpose did you take out these unit trusts?
Mm.
If it's for university fees, then by all means, continue in that particular structure. The one thing I'd probably recommend that Nikki also considers doing is taking out a tax-free savings account in the names of her children, to also help in terms of the long-term savings goal, and also including that tax efficiency into her overall portfolio. So I'd say stick to the current strategy you have, monitor the performance by all means, and make sure that the returns you're getting are in line with your expectation and are at least inflation beating.
Gotcha. And then what is the responsibility? This is one that we often hear, actually. What's the responsibility of the investment company when they say, sorry, we lost your money on your investment?
So the unfortunate thing is, yes, there might be fiduciary consequences in terms of, did they actually have proper risk management strategies in place? But beyond that, you as an investor must know, when you, the day you decide to invest, you take on the responsibility of any sort of market risk or fluctuations.
Right.
So if the market goes up, you ride with the wave. If it goes down, go sit in the corner, suck your thumb, and stick with it, because you made a decision to be an adult and invest like big people do.
Oh, you're hilarious. look, I mean, this is unfortunate. There's some people, obviously, as you say, there's fiduciary duties that need to be taken care of. Sometimes we do have irresponsible sort of behavior. And so that's the stuff that you need to separate from regular market fluctuations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, there was a recent case that came out where the FSCA actually fined a company. I won't name them, but you'll see it in the electronic news platform. Mm. Where they didn't do that, and this case dates back to about 2011, but it's catching up with them. So the law is there to help regulate certain behavior, like you said. But when it comes to market fluctuations, there's just so much that they can also do.
Donnie says, great show on finance. Your guest was excellent and such a breath of fresh air in this space. Oh, how nice is that?
I love you, Donnie.
I'm just waiting on this. Okay, we've got a voice note here on savings. Take a listen.
Greatest gift you can give somebody for their kid is actually at their first birthday party, open up a, some savings account, whatever. And instead of buying another toy that they don't need, people can just put like money into that for the education fund. and watch that grow over the years, and then they could use that for the education. Way better than more wet wipes and a flippant toy and another Bob the Builder playset that you don't need and all that type of stuff. But cool, come on, let's save, South Africa, let's save.
Woo, I love that advice. I completely agree. I do that for my godchildren.
I love it. So, you know, I was actually at one of my clients' baby showers on Sunday, and that's exactly what I did. I started a tax-free savings account for that unborn child, because we need to change the stereotype from buying pencils, crayons, you know, those rubber toys, and start thinking longevity and sustainability and wealth creation.
Brilliant. Tsungai Masendeke, CFP and Financial Literacy and Inclusion Advocate. We look forward to welcoming you back in the future. Thanks for getting us going on our savings ideas this global financial planning.